The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Must be 21 or older. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks moving the chains means pulling on your leash. That's Lenny. He doesn't have an actual chain, but some dogs do. I don't know. You don't see those that often anymore, sometimes with pit bulls. I am so happy to be joined today by a first-time guest, which is always very exciting, someone who I have known for a little bit, though. He is a former NFL scout. You can find him on Twitter at Brentley12. He is Brentley Weissman. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Mina. Thanks for having me. Excited to talk some NFL drafts, some skill players. It's a lot of discourse, I would say. You know, this is definitely the most talked about position group for this year, so excited to dive in.
Yeah, we're going to get into the wide receivers in detail today. We're going to talk a little bit about the tight ends, mostly one tight end, to be honest. And then this running back group, which took me a while to get to because I don't anticipate any of them going, certainly not in the first round. We'll see what happens in the second. But I actually found a lot of players I liked and I think could be exciting NFL players. So I do want to talk about the group, even if it's maybe less buzzed about than the wide receiver group, which, to be fair, is, I believe, entirely deserving of all of the hype it's getting. I sent you a bunch of names, and I kind of put them in tiers, starting, of course, with the group of three at the top. So I feel like we should take our time, really dive into these players at the top of this draft, because they are amazing. And I'm talking, of course, about Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Rome Odunze. I haven't seen anyone, well, I guess Chris Sims, who was just on the pod, had Brian Thomas higher. I don't agree with that personally. He's a good player, and he's in the next tier for me. Let's just start, before we actually get into the details, Brentley, are you with, like, I see these three players, and when I'm watching them, I find myself giggling, because I think they're so damn good. And it's so hard for me to imagine a world in which these three receivers aren't really good NFL players.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we'll dive into each of them and kind of talk about what makes them so good and maybe kind of why I would stack them a certain way. But in terms of them just being elite, outstanding prospects, all three of them are in my top five overall players in the class.
Yeah.
I think there's an argument that they're the three best players overall in the class. They are all so equally talented. They all win kind of different ways, which I think really makes it fun.
Yeah.
But it is a very, very good class at the top. And I think you're right. It is a clear top three. And then everyone else kind of stacks in beneath them.
So let's just get right at it. Do you have, like, how do you rank the top three?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm not going to be super hot take, but I do have Marvin Harrison Jr. Okay. 1A.
Yeah. Okay.
But my 1B is not Malik Nabers. My 1B is actually Rome Odunze.
Okay, great.
And then awesome. I have Malik Nabers as 2. So that's kind of how I would stack the 3. Mm. So I know a lot of people have the Malik Nabers is, you know, the 1B to Harrison. I would take Rome Odunze over Nabers. And I think the gap between Harrison and Odunze is minuscule at best. I mean,
wow.
I think splitting hairs. So I guess that kind of speaks to how much I love Rome Odunze.
Yeah, it's a little off consensus, although it's not entirely, like Daniel Jeremiah, who came on and talked quarterbacks last week, he has Odunze as 1, which yeah. I'm actually pretty close to you. It's such a cop-out. I am Harrison 1, but then I have the other two at like A and B. And my answer is, and this is an extremely cop-out answer. If you ever don't want to rank things or give comps or takes in the draft, you just say, it really depends on the team and their fit and the knee. But I really feel that way.
It's true.
Especially with these receivers, because as you said, they win in different ways. They'll win. And Odunze is just such a remarkable talent. I view him... I mean, I'm a UW fan. You're an Oregon fan. I won't hold that against you. Although I will if you try to argue that like Bucky Irving's the best running back in the class. If I have to push.
Let's wait to that moment.
We'll wait till we get to Franklin as well. But I mean, Odunze, watching him, the thing I kept saying over and over is I don't see a world in which he doesn't succeed. in the NFL. I think he's one of the highest floor prospects I've ever seen. Now I feel that way also about Harrison Jr. So we should probably start with him because that's where it sounds like we both have him as wide receiver one, which is not everybody agrees right now. As you said, there are people who are just really drawn to the speed of Neighbors. And I get it, especially watching the league right now where you see teams like Miami where speed kills and they're so you're just able to completely manipulate the way defenses play you if you have a player with that kind of game-changing speed and creation after the catch. But real quick on Harrison Jr., last couple of years, second in yards per route run, most or probably second most catches versus man coverage, no drops on deep balls. I mean, he's unbelievable. He's really good at just about everything. I think that's what strikes me the most watching him, Brentley, is he just looks like he's been in the NFL for 5 years. Like all the little things he does, the way he attacks defenses, the way he sets up DBs, the way he wins at the line of scrimmage, the leaping, the way he makes the adjustments he makes for inaccurate balls, the little push-offs at the top of his route. I mean, he's just so advanced. It's really striking.
It's the rare moment where an elite physical talent also is coupled with outstanding and just special nuance of the game. It's the little subtleties with the subtle hand push, the heading body fakes, the ability to have the late hands when attacking the football. It's those things that really separate and make him an impossible cover. And I think with Harrison, it's the issue of right now, he has been touted that number one generational receiver since going back to his sophomore year. And I think we're at the period where we're just looking for holes. We're looking for holes because ultimately there is no perfect prospect. And so he didn't work out of the combine. And so now we want to question, okay, well, maybe he's not really that elite top five caliber athlete. I think he actually is. I went back in preparation for the podcast and really kind of wanted to see some of his deep targets to see if I can get a feel of, okay, how fast is Harrison?
He's fast. I hate it when people talk about it like he's not fast. He's so fast. Sorry.
I keep thinking this guy is fast.
Especially at his height.
Fast.
Yeah.
He is fast. He can win down the field. He opens up his, once he opens up his stride, he is eating up grass. Now, is he Malik Neighbors from the 0 to 10, the 0 to 15 yards? No, he's not. And that's totally fine. But when he's able to open up his stride, get it going, corners have a hard time running with him.
Yeah.
And for me, it's he can run full speed, but always be under control. Always be under control. And he is such a fluid athlete for a player of his size. He's running full speed, putting stress on the corner because, again, he does have the speed that you have to respect it, and he's able to stop on a dime. Stop on a dime, work his way back to the football on comebacks, break inside on 10-yard ends. He is just a really, really hard cover. And then the issue with Harrison is even if you are able to run stride for stride with him, his hands. He's big. He's strong. He's able to win the catch point. He's just always open, even when he's covered. And so he is a really unique talent in the sense that he has enough of bloodlines. He has the production. He has the athleticism. I don't want to call him a can't-miss player, but if there are going to be can't-miss players, he is in that tier.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that separates him from Neighbors to me is he's scheme-proof. Like you could drop him into literally any NFL offense, and he is, you know, the prototypical X receiver that you build in a lab. Whereas Neighbors, you know, first of all, I mean, Neighbors actually the speed at his size is unbelievable, and we'll talk about it a little bit more. But I view him more as I mentioned Miami. If you put him in the right offense, it is like pouring gasoline on a fire. Like it is. You could have just the best offense in the NFL. I believe that. However, he's not scheme-proof. I don't think he is. I think he does require the right – I don't think he requires the right situation to succeed. I think he'll have success wherever he goes. But to really hit that ceiling, I think you need certain – you know, you have to optimize him because of his skill set. it's possible that he can beat press coverage. You don't really see it. You didn't have to at LSU. And that's another area where Nabers shines is just, you know, I think I mentioned at the top, the second most catches, or was it first downs, pardon me, versus man coverage in the league. Everything, any question you have is answered on the tape from him. The releases, can he beat press? Can he beat man? Can he beat elite? You know, how does he stack up against elite corners, your DeGenes, whatever, guys who've been drafted. Now, you know, Nabers also in the SEC played some pretty elite defenses. I don't want to say that he's unique that way, but I just don't really have any questions. I don't know. The only thing is like, and even yards after the catch, like,
that's what I was going to say.
It's pretty good.
That's the one area, if, you know, we are going to try to just dig, and I mean really, really dig and nitpick on a one hole for Harrison, is I don't think he's the most dynamic player after the catch.
Yeah.
And I would say, you know, Odunze, I think that's where, to me, like, it's the separators. I think Odunze is better than him after the catch.
Really?
I do. I think Odunze is a little stronger after the catch, and a little more just short area quickness with the ball in his hands. I think Harrison, though, if he's able to catch the ball in stride, he's such a smooth and just natural runner that there is no wasted steps. Once, you know, some receivers, when they go to catch the ball, they stop running or they pause because they're kind of fighting it. Harrison is just very natural, be able to pluck it, and mid-stride he's going. And so while I do think, you know, he isn't that elusive, make you miss in the open field, probably not as strong to like break a bunch of tackles, I think he is, you know, once he is able to get the ball in his hands, he can go, just because he's so smooth and just everything he does is so fluid.
Yeah, I think for me versus Odunze with Harrison Jr., it's what he does before the catch that kind of separates him. I mean, he's just such a gorgeous route runner. It's crazy. Like, it's like teach tape. Whereas Rome isn't quite as refined. Different things were asked of him in the Washington offense, which is also part of the reason why he didn't have as much production after the catch, by the way. You know, it's so much, hey, just Rome, win this 50-50 ball outside the numbers, which is great because he's amazing at it, and that's what you should be doing. But, you know, I think in the NFL – both of these guys will play similar roles in the offenses that they're drafted into. And I think I trust Harrison earlier on, certainly, to be a guy you can count on to win every route, to have like a complete route tree, to get open very quickly. Whereas Odunze, you know, he's going to have to win with his hands and his physicality a bit earlier on. And good news, his hands and his physicality are freaking unreal. So let's pivot off of Harrison to there. Yeah. You have him over Nabers. So the counter argument would be the speed aspect, and Nabers with the ball, both before the catch, but then with the ball in his hands, it's hard not to think about Ja'Marr Chase, not just because of LSU, but because of the way it looks, frankly. Why do you have a preference for Odunze, even if he is less explosive in that way?
Yeah, so for me with Odunze, and I love what you said at the top, because I think I've said that somewhere. Like, I firmly believe this. I don't see a path for Odunze to bust. Like, I think he is such a for sure thing.
Yeah.
And it's just the way he wins. He can win with route running. I think he's 6'2", 214 pounds. Man, a 4.45, so he's plenty fast. I mean, you see him win deep. I mean, he can run. Now, he's not Nabers' explosiveness, but he can win vertical. And then for me, it's the ability to consistently be in position between the ball and the defender. He is never out of position. It is crazy to me, just his body control, his level of comfort when the ball's in the air, I think is special. I think it's rare. I think it's something that you can't really coach. Because, you know, I mean, we've seen so many fast receivers not work out. And I'm not saying this against Nabers, but I'm just saying the key for me trait that I like value more so than anything is, what's your comfort level playing the football? Can you adjust? If it's an off-target throw, are you able to run full speed, turn your head late, locate the football, and make a play on it? to me, no one in this class does it better than Odunze. I think he is, that's what separates Davante Adams. You know, Davante Adams to me, he isn't, and I think that's the comp. I think the comp is Adams and Odunze. Yeah. And if I recall, Adams didn't run the fastest 40. I think he was a 4.5 guy coming out of Fresno State. But, you know, his ability to set up defenders, you know, some of the things he's able to do kind of in the route stem. And, you know, Odunze can beat press. He's strong. He's physical. And, you know, he isn't the most explosive out of the break. I agree with you. I think Harrison is probably a little more fluid at the stem, at the top of the stem. But Odunze does have enough kind of that separation quickness to snap out of the route, make the break, create just enough separation. And he's a big target. He's a big body target. He was a sure-handed receiver who, again, I think is maybe not dynamic after the catch, but he can certainly get you what's there. He can break tackles. I think he has a really good vision with the ball in his hands. I think if you go back to some of his tape as a freshman and as a sophomore, you kind of saw that. You saw that with his punt return stuff. You know, he was asked to return punts, and he was really successful. And I think he's just a very instinctual player with the ball in his hands. To me, I just think he has no weaknesses. Like, he is so good at everything he does. I think whoever drafts him is going to get an immediate 1,000-yard, 9-touchdown receiver from day one.
They won't do this, I believe. And increasingly, I think everything coming out of the Chargers, do you work for, right? The Chargers, right?
I worked for the Chargers back in 17 through 19.
Okay. So the Chargers are picking a 5.
Yeah.
I think they're going to take all, honestly, or trade down.
Yeah.
But as you're talking about Odunze, God, it would be a nice fit with Justin Herbert. Like, everybody always wants to give Justin Herbert the explosive downfield weapon, Neighbors, because he's got the cannon. But, like, I've watched a lot of Justin Herbert, and he can make those throws. He wants to get first downs. And sometimes, honestly, that's probably the thing I find most frustrating about him at times.
Yeah.
With Allen gone, to me, that's the biggest hole on this offense. And I just can imagine, and not that they're different players in a way, but I just can so easily imagine Odunze pairing so well with him and being so productive immediately.
He would be, I'm not going to say Pro Bowl just because there's so many other talented receivers in the conference, but an immediate number one defense have the game plan. This is the offense can go through Odunze.
Yeah.
The offense can go through Marvin Harrison Jr. And we're kind of going to Neighbors now. I don't know if Neighbors in this juncture, in this moment right now, can really be the focal point for a passing offense. I think if you put Neighbors in the Chargers offense, yes, he's going to be great, you know, on goal balls and slants and posts, like 100%. But in terms of lining him up out wide and asking him to, you know, beat press coverage consistently on third down, really be able to get open via double coverage, I don't know if he's there quite yet. I think there's a lot of refinement for Neighbors in terms of some of the things he is as a route runner. In terms of his ball tracking ability, I don't think is quite up to snuff in comparison as the other two. Where I think is Odunze and Harrison, like, those are surefire X receivers.
Yeah.
Day one, they can really be high target players, and that's why I kind of have it stacked the way I do.
I hear you, but damn that speed. I just want to give him his flowers briefly.
100%.
And it's not just – we're talking about Neighbors. It's not just – it's obviously not just straight line speed if you watch the tape. What is so remarkable about his speed – two things. One – he's not, a wispy fella. Like, he has size. Kind of, he's bigger. Actually, is he? I'm trying to figure out. He might be smaller than Waddle, but a little taller.
Yeah, he's a little lighter than Waddle. I think he's six. I think Neighbors
just under 200
pounds. So he's a
okay. He is at his speed. that density and size, and it shows up. He does not get pushed around on the field. Line of scrimmage is a different story, but again, you alluded to this. Over half the time he was in the slot, got a lot of free releases. To me, that's more of a question mark than a, I don't think he can do it. But that speed at that size, and then the way he gets in and out of his cuts without decelerating at all, like his, the way his speed just builds and builds as he runs routes is so freaking cool. That's, it's Chase-like, it's very unique. And so I think like he might not be scheme proof in the same way. And I think he'll be good no matter where. Yeah. But if he lands with the right quarterback in the right offense with the right receiver next to him, it's going to be blouses. Now, my question would be, well, what is that? Because when you're looking at the top of the draft, you know, we're talking, unless there's a trade up, we're talking Arizona, we're talking the Chargers.
Giants, potentially.
Yeah. There's not like an awesome destination, in my opinion. Like, there's not like, I'm like, oh, this is perfect, this is great. Like, if the Chargers still had Keenan Allen, I think I would be like, oh, great, you know, like, but yeah.
One place, Mina, I would say, and I doubt he falls that far just because I think the NFL, and from the people I've talked to, people love Neighbors. You know, let me just say that.
Yes.
People love Neighbors. I think it's the kind of Tyreek Hill effect where it's, he truly is that game-breaking player where if I was an advanced scout, I go to my defensive coordinator, hey, like, he could kill us. You know, like, yes, this guy could truly change the game. Whereas, you know, at Dunze, like, you're not going to be – Dunze can go off for 8 to 160, but the Neighbors is 4 for 220. That's really going to kill you, right? But I think the Atlanta Falcons could be really interesting if Neighbors fits. Because you mentioned
sicko stuff. Yeah.
You mentioned the Kyle Shanahan kind of offense, the way things that Mike McDaniel's doing. And I think Atlanta's new offensive coordinator, Zach Robinson,
yeah,
you know, he comes from that scheme. And you already have Drake London. You have Kyle Pitts. The one thing they're missing is pure speed.
Yeah.
And we know Kirk Cousins, you know, he gets made fun of as, you know, check down Kirk, yada, yada, yada. He can air the football. He can throw deep pretty well. And so I think that would be a great fit. Keep Neighbors in the South and let him cook. I just don't know if he's going to be there to your
Yeah, point. I think he's going to go early just because that speed is so alluring. And so many teams around the NFL have watched Miami and just been so envious of – I mean, the same thing you saw versus LSU. We're talking about Thomas Jr. in a second. But because of Neighbors, it's similar to Miami. You can't play single high. You just can't. Like, you will because, you know, you have to. But it's so gosh darn dangerous to do it against him because your chances of getting cooked are so high. And – from the perspective of an offensive coordinator, knowing that when you draft one player, you can affect the way defenses have to play you in the same way Miami did, that's just so tantalizing. Now, the other two players we're talking about, I think creates very different problems because defensive coordinators also go in being like, oh my God, which cornerback do we sacrifice to, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr. or whatever. But it's the speed is just so appealing. I think, I guess to sum it up, Brentley, these three could go. I think Harrison Jr. should be one, but I won't be mad at any team that takes any of them. Like, I'll get it. What I think is interesting, though, is I do view there, I believe there's a pretty significant drop off to the next tier.
Yeah.
Most people have Thomas Jr. is very widely seen as kind of like, he's like the JJ McCarthy of the receivers in this class. and then AD Mitchell is kind of rising. That was one where I liked him so much during the season. And then now that he's been rising, it's kind of like validated my feelings. How do you view those two players? And do you think that there's any other receiver? We'll go into the players in detail. How do you view them, though, in order? And do you think there's any other receivers that belong in the same tier?
Yeah, so for your first part of your question, I do have AD Mitchell above Brian Thomas.
Really? Okay.
I'll dive into it. I'm not the biggest
Brian
Thomas guy. I understand the appeal. I understand the thought of Brian Thomas.
Speed and size.
I personally just wouldn't want to take him as high as people are saying. I mean, you see him in mocks now at top 15 on average. You know, it's very popular, I would say, at this point in time. And I think that's a little rich. Before I kind of dive into why I like either one, Keon Coleman is a guy I do think deserves to be in that tier. I know it's taboo to like Keon Coleman now, I guess, apparently, but I still really do like Keon Coleman. I'd actually have him, call me crazy, I think he's actually wide receiver 4 for me. That's probably my hottest take of the pod, but
that's a hot take.
I do think Keon Coleman deserves to be in that tier. I think all three of those receivers do a lot that you like. I think all of them probably have some holes, which is why I think, to your ultimate point, the top three are the top three for a reason. I think all three of those guys can be future number ones. I think the group of A.D. Mitchell, Brian Thomas, and Keon Coleman, you have a wide receiver one ceiling, but it's most likely they're going to settle down to that really, really good number two. For me, A.D. Mitchell, he'd be a guy who I thought really helped himself after the combine. That 4.34, I did not see on tape. I was like, what?
4.34? At 6.4, that's the thing. It was, I think he ran before Worthy, right? His teammate who broke the record. Yeah. And I was like, guys, no. Like, that doesn't matter. I mean, it's nice. You know, Worthy's, we're going to talk about Worthy.
Yeah.
A 6.4 guy running this fast at his weight is much more meaningful, because that is bonkers numbers.
So A.D. Mitchell, I'll start with him and then I'll kind of do A.D.
Yeah, let's get A.D. Mitchell, because I'm really high on him and I have been tempted to put him over Thomas and people keep talking me off of it. And I do have some concerns, but I like him a lot. Yeah. I'll tell you what I like about him. Well, first of all, over the last couple of years, 83% of his catches went for a first down or a touchdown. That's the second highest rate in college football and the highest of any of the prospects. So he is, as the kids say, a bucket. As we just kind of talked about, does have the size and the speed. He's not Brian Thomas Jr. on tape in terms of the speed, but I was a little bit surprised to see him test so quick, but it kind of speaks to how I feel generally about him, which is as good as he was at Texas in an offense where obviously there are a lot of mouths to feed, you kind of felt like he can be better.
Yeah.
Like and some of that is on him, frankly, in terms of like the tape, but then there are just moments, individual plays when he is involved, where he looks to me like he belongs in the top three because of the route running, the body control, the catch, the hands, his hands are unbelievable. And like he is, we talked about Harrison Jr. being like the prototypical X receiver. Mitchell could beat that. Yeah. Like he can beat man. He's so good at finding voids in zone. The problem with me is more just consistency. And the question of like, okay, well, you could be this guy, but at times you weren't in this offense. How much of that was how many options there were and how much of it was you?
Yeah. So what I'm hearing you say is, and it's literally in my notes, is he a dog? Does he have it in him? You know, and it's at the wide receiver position, you never really want to ask that because you want that guy to be an alpha. You want that guy to, hey, I don't care if it's first, second, third down, like throw me the ball, give me the football because I am that guy. And with AD, there's so many things you like. He has the size. He has the speed, 4.34. I mean, that's no joke. At 6'4", 205 pounds, and he's beautiful size and speed combination. But it's also the polish. He has the route polish. He's able to set up defenders. He's quick out in and out of the break. Outstanding hands and body control. He's able to pluck the football out of the air. He's strong after the catch. I mean, like, I'm talking about a potential top 12 receiver. I mean, the way he's read is the way his scouting report reads is a top 12 pick receiver, but the production is so inconsistent this past year. And even going back to Georgia, it's like, he's very content to just being out of the play. and kind of lackadaisical in some of his routes. And that is very concerning. And so for me, A.D. Mitchell, if I was betting on like who am I going to get, like if I get the best of A.D. Mitchell, I'm for sure taking him over Keon Coleman and Brian Thomas. That's not even a question.
Yeah.
But it's just so few and far between. You know, there's so many long instances of him not being that guy, but he has everything you want, everything you want. And he is an extremely talented receiver. And with Brian Thomas, like Brian Thomas, I do think he's a dog. I do think he has a competitiveness that kind of intangible that, you know, you would want in a receiver. With Brian Thomas, I just think he's one dimensional. I think he is, 6'3", 209 pounds, ran a 4.33. So
you think he's a go bomber?
He's a vision, you know? And he wins vertical. He does all that stuff. You love, he's a big body guy. I just don't know if you could run an offense through him in terms of like the full route tree.
Yeah. I was talking to my friend Danny Kelly about him, and I think he comped him to Christian Watson. And I thought, yeah, that seems about right. And it's a good comp though, because Christian Watson has become a very good and useful NFL player. And so that's the thing. I think when you have the kind of speed and size that Brian Thomas does, and the production that he had, I view it as different from A.D. Mitchell, where to your, like, A.D. Mitchell feels really boom or bust, honestly. Yeah. Thomas, I'm like, no, an NFL offense will find a way to get use out of him. The question I have though is like, okay, you have so much speed and size that DBs are they're playing like way off because they're frightened. You know, yes, you can run hitches off of that and he does it all day long, but what else can you do? You know, do you have the ability to expand your route tree? And it's just not on tape really. So mm-hmm. I think there's a bit of a projection there. So I guess to kind of wrap this up, I do like the player because of his traits and because of what you said, like the tape is really consistent, but I don't view them that far apart because I think the ceiling of Mitchell is higher. So,
yeah.
And then there's Keon Coleman.
There's Keon Coleman, who apparently is just everyone's least favorite receiver, right? Apparently.
That's a tease. Let's take a break, come back and talk about Coleman, and then whip through some of the receivers before we get to the other positions.
Awesome.
Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? Two words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app, it's an empire. 21 and older, must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited.
Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. Or in Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.org. West Virginia, visit 1800gambler.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, DC, Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Okay, we're back. So the group of receivers that we're going to whip through are Coleman, we talked about, Troy Franklin, who I actually have above Keon Coleman, Ladd, my beloved Ladd, the Xaviers, well, really quick, Roman Wilson. I want to talk about Roman Wilson. Maybe briefly, Polk and Pearsall. We'll see. Those are the main guys. So let's start with Coleman. So, Coleman, week one, LSU, the world is watching him and saying, who is this gigantic freak, the second coming of DK Metcalf? He is undoubtedly going to be first round receiver. He's so big and so fast and catches everything. Then play drops off a little bit, bad games, quarterback gets hurt. Quarterback wasn't that good, to be honest. And there's a lot of questions. The main question I think people have about him is the contested catches, which is kind of his calling card, as he's this big guy. Is it because he can't separate? Is that a concern? And then how, like, in the NFL, is size and speed enough? Does he have other qualities? So you're high on him.
Yeah.
Make the case for him, and then I'll let you know kind of where I come down on things.
Yeah, so with Keon Coleman, you know, the thing that really people don't like about him is the 4.64, you know, the 4.6 140. He isn't the fastest receiver, and we know that. But you know, when did the ability to win the football in the air and be bigger and stronger than the corner not matter? Like, when did that stop mattering? In a league that had Mike Williams, who I was there for, yeah, the top 10, he's been a productive receiver. Cortland Sutton, you see Denver week to week, he's really productive. Drake London literally went top 10 and has been a 1,000-yard receiver, I think, every year he's been in the NFL. None of those guys are great separators. None of those guys are 4.4 guys, right? And I'm not saying Keon Coleman is a better prospect than a Mike Williams, who, again, is a top 10 pick. Drake London is a top 10 pick, but you can't tell me that Keon Coleman isn't at the very least 80% of those guys. And if that's the case, why am I seeing him not even in the first round? Like that's where I think I'm not fully understanding, because on tape, I think Keon Coleman is actually pretty fluid for a guy his size. You are able to see him get in and out of breaks.
Yeah.
Now, does he have that, you know, really kind of quick snap? Maybe not. But I don't think he's a stiff athlete by any means. I think he's really physical at the catch point. Some of the stuff he's able to do, winning the ball in the air, the strong hands, the acrobatic catches, all outstanding. You see him on punt return, for gosh sake. This is a 6'3", 212-pound receiver on punt return, making tacklers miss. Like, I think he's really underrated with the ball in his hands, actually. You know, again, that's not going to be something that people ask him to do at the NFL level, but it's on tape, you know? And I guess where I really am with Keon Coleman is, why does he have to be a big slot? Like, who is making this the rule? Because we have seen Drake London, we have seen other teams win consistently on the outside, but they win in different ways. Like, they don't have to win the same way a Ladd McConkey's going to win, being very quick and shifty and very nuanced route runner. They win with body positioning and being stronger through the stem and being able to win the ball in the air. Like, it's okay if it looks different than some of the other receivers.
Yeah.
And I think that's when you kind of lose it with Coleman, if that makes sense.
He looks bigger than 6'3". I'll start there on Dave. So that's interesting. I'm with you. I think that it's kind of like a philosophical question, and that's why you started that way, which I think is astute, which is strength, size, and contested catch ability. Is that undervalued relative to just like raw speed, right? Like, this draft is interesting because actually, well, I guess him versus Franklin is a pretty good. That is kind of the debate, because they're about as far as apart as you can get. I prefer Franklin, I think, just because of the route running ability. But I do think that the traits are so special, it's probably worth it for some team to take a bet on it and hope that with better quarterback play and coaching, you can get him to refine who he is as a route runner at the next level. I mean, I mentioned DK Metcalf. And DK Metcalf is different because, he's different in a lot of ways. He's probably a little more similar to Leggett than Coleman, actually, as a prospect. But, you know, coming out, the question was like, well, okay, how many routes can this guy really run? Obviously, the lateral agility testing was terrible. And he learned how to run routes in the NFL. Honestly, like this is such an underrated part of DK Metcalf's game, is like every year he has gotten better as a route runner. It's not even just like the technique, it's his spatial awareness, how he sets up defenders, the way he gets open versus zone in particular. And I think that it's totally plausible that Coleman can do all those things. And why not bet on it knowing that he's so goddamn big and strong? That said, I still have Franklin over him. So just to kind of move to him really quickly, you know, so I have a lot of concerns about the physique. He's very thin. And which is funny because when I was watching Oregon and I watched a lot of Oregon, I've watched a lot of Oregon, obviously, because so many prospects, I think I found myself drawn more to Tez, who is even smaller, but is, I think, a really cool player.
Yeah, he's going to be awesome next year.
We won't talk about him. But he is 6'3", 185-ish. 180. Yeah. Yeah, that's small. And it shows up. It shows up on tape. He can get pushed around, but he to me is already. It is a funny contrast with Coleman. Very polished.
Yeah.
Just so good at getting open. So good with the ball in his hands. He's creative. Right. He's just smart. So I look at the success in recent years, last couple of years, of slight receivers coming into the NFL. I think of guys like Olave and Addison, who are both better prospects. But I do feel like maybe that's less of a concern for me than it was in past years.
Yeah, so I'm obviously Oregon guy. So I've watched every single snap of Troy Franklin over the past 3 years. And, you know, it's very refreshing, I would say, kind of hearing you acknowledge the polish that Franklin does have. I think it's so easy to watch Franklin's tape, or maybe people are just watching the highlights and come away with him just being a vertical threat. Him just being the Taquan Thornton of the world, who are just kind of longer receivers who win primarily vertically. And yes, like, Franklin is a great vertical receiver, but he is an outstanding route runner. His ability to get in and out of breaks, he's very smooth and efficient in his movement skills. And he's very cerebral. You know, he's very good at finding open space in zone. And he's very good at just the nuances of setting up defenders and attacking leverage and using his hands. Like, he does all those things at a really high level that I think has really gotten kind of lost in the evaluation process of Franklin. The one thing about Franklin that, you know, I struggle with is the size and the physicality. He has some flashes of being able to win in 50-50 situations. I think it was against UCLA in 2022. He has two just moss kind of catches going above and beyond the corner. But at the same time, he's 175, 180 pounds, and corners are going to be able to put him in the dirt if they get hands on him, right? And so I think he is a bit of a tough evaluation. I do think the recent success of Devontae Smith, of Addison, of Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson even, these are all receivers under 180 almost, I think. Yeah. And they all have come into the league and have success. And I think a lot of it is because offensive coordinators are smart. They're able to kind of put the receivers in situations for them to avoid press, have free releases, you know, and if you give Troy Franklin free releases, forget about it, right? He's that good. And so I do love Troy. I have him as my wide receiver 5, actually above Adonai Mitchell and Brian Thomas. So it's kind of a
little rich for me, but yeah.
But yeah, so I really love Franklin. I love Coleman. I think all of these guys are going to be really good.
There's three players I kind of almost want to group together because I put them in this group of three players who, like, I view all three as having a very high floor. And that is Ladd McConkey, who I love, who I've talked about already, so I don't want to get into too much detail on him, but Roman Wilson and Jalen Polk.
Yeah.
I just think they're all going to be good. Now, will any of them be great? That is, I think, a very reasonable question, and I think there's reasonable doubts about that. But they're different styles of players. I think, you know, Wilson, you're going to want to play in the slot, probably. McConkey, I think, actually has a little bit more inside-outside versatility than maybe he's getting credit for. But
you can do that.
Yeah, and then Polk, the same. But they're all, to me, like, really smart receivers. And maybe that's why I mean, they're all really reliable. I think every offensive coordinator looks at them and says, yeah, I want one of those.
Yeah.
None of them are wide receiver ones. Yeah. Nobody is making mistakes about that. but it's so easy for me to see their skill sets, and they're a little different, translating at the next level because of their reliability, the way they attack defenses, the nuances to their route running, and then across the board, the hands. I like them all. There's a couple other players who you might say have higher upside than them who are below them, but I just think all three of these guys who will probably go in the second round, I imagine, maybe third, will be immediate NFL contributors.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I like all three of them as well. If I were to stack those three just for fun, I'd probably have Ladd, Wilson, and then Polk. I think Ladd, to me, though, is just – I mean, he ran a 4.39 40. He runs just outstanding routes, such a smart player, really dynamic with the ball in his hands, actually. I mean, like, he can make defenders miss and take a screen to the – take it 60 yards down the field for a touchdown. I mean, he is very, very good with the ball in his hands, but he's even better when the ball's not in his hands. Like, that he's so unique in that way. And I think his best spot will be in the slot. Give him free releases and let him kind of cook in the intermediate short areas of the field. But I think in two receiver sets, he can certainly be your outside Z, 100%. Yeah. I think he does not have that slot-only tag, where I do think Roman Wilson, I think he's slot-only. I think he's slot-only, needs kind of that free release, let him work the middle of the field, work kind of outside and kind of utilize his speed. And then Polk, to me, is just very smooth, very sudden, really good hands, great at the catch point. I like him. I saw a comp. I think it was Nate Tice or somebody had Jacoby Myers. I love that.
That one keeps coming up. Yeah, I just did a podcast where they asked me about Jacoby Myers. I was like, yeah, I can see that. It's funny, right? Because Adams and Myers in Los Angeles, because I brought this up with if Penix Jr. was to go to Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
He'd basically be playing with like the NFL version of his college receivers in Myers and Adams. But yeah, it's a good comp because, I mean, he catches everything, man. I mean, Polk catches everything. Like, how can that guy not succeed? Catching the football is the most important. You got to catch the ball.
Well, and all three of those guys can. And then I'll add Ricky Pearsall from Florida.
He's tough.
He's in that tier for me as well.
Interesting. Okay.
Getting for Chris Olave. I mean, he really is. I mean, like, just the smoothness, the suddenness, the ability to create separation, not just horizontally, but vertically. Like, he's a guy. I think, depending on where he gets drafted, he might be one of the steals of the draft. I really, really am high on him.
He is one where I remember watching Anthony Richardson, and at first I was like, oh, Florida. But then the more I watched, I was like, ooh. White guy's got some stuff to him. And then, I kind of fell in love with his game. I do think he's going to be a slot, you know, in the NFL. I like the fact that you put him in this category because of the toughness and the hands, ability to make difficult catches in traffic.
He has no fear.
No. Yeah. He is tough. I have him. I've seen all four of the ones we've been talking about, by the way, in different orders. And I really think it's going to come down to which attributes the team that's taking them is looking for. I didn't mention Leggett because I do view him as really different because to me, he is more boom or bust. He is more of that Metcalf type prospect. What is he? Let me see. 6'3", 227. Enormous. Yeah. Similar to DK, he was just kind of vertical only in college. So I'd have to see how that game translates. It would be just a bet on traits for the most part. And you can run end arounds and stuff. I mean, the speed and size. It's interesting. This is a class where you have like these little like route running technician slot guys, and then a bunch of like speed and size players outside of the top three. Which brings me, I guess, to the last player just really quickly, Xavier Worthy, because I do want to acknowledge, you know, this is the guy who A.D. Mitchell's teammate at Texas. I do want to get his measurables right because they're very relevant. So I have here 6'0", 165. That is
tiny.
very thin.
Yeah.
Too thin? It's very thin.
It's very thin. It's very concerning. You know, you wouldn't want him to be your number one option. But I actually comped him to, you probably like this, John Brown, the old receiver, and Smokey Brown for Buffalo and the Cardinals.
I love John Brown.
I love him. I love
John
him.
Brown. This is so self-referential, but I had a meme where I would just constantly post John Brown is always open. Because he's always open.
He honestly was. And so when I watched Xavier Worthy the first time, I just thought that I was going to get your classic deep threat. That's the only way he wins, right? He can run routes. And so he's a full route runner, really good after the catch, surprisingly, where like he can make defenders miss and do a bunch of those kind of different things. I came away really liking Xavier Worthy. Now, obviously, the size is, again, a pretty significant concern. But I do think he's more of a complete receiver than perhaps he's getting credit for at this stage. And so I actually really did like Xavier Worthy. And then quickly with Legette, I would not be shocked if he is the surprise first-round pick.
Because of the traits?
I just think some of these coaches are just going to be enamored with what he could be. You see it. You see it in his highlights. You see it. It's just the other guys can't do some of the things he could do. The way he attacks the football in the air, he's so strong. After the catch, stuff's ridiculous. Like, I would not be shocked. I would not be shocked if he is the surprise first-round pick of the receiver class.
Yeah, I think some team would look at him and think that he is a DK.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't even want to take a stand. I don't know. Okay. Brock Bowers. So I have not talked about Brock Bowers at all. So I'm very excited to do this. I think there's two conversations to be had about Brock Bowers. One is Brock Bowers, the player. Two is Brock Bowers, the draft pick. Yeah. Because that is a conversation about value and position and destination. Let's get to that. Let's first establish who Brock Bowers is as a football player. Brock Bowers, for those who don't know, the tight end at Georgia, 6'4", 230, led all tight ends in just about every meaningful statistical category. Unbelievable offensive weapon for Georgia football team last few years. I think what stands out to me, I mean, he's incredibly complete player as a pass catcher. Used bit as much like a receiver as a tight end, let's split out wide a fair amount, used in the slot a lot, primarily the slot. To me, the route running, the releases, the hands, the speed, the creation after the catch, it's all there. When we talk about modern tight ends and when we talk about NFL teams that use the position to sort of weaponize the position to attack defenses, Bowers is the type of player you're talking about. A guy who is too fast for linebackers, too big and physical for DBs. I think he's, when people talk about him as being one of the best prospects to play the position in recent years, I do not find that to be hyperbolic, outside of maybe his blocking.
Yeah.
What do you come down on him?
Bowers, for me, I view him similarly to you. I think he is one of the kind of rare tight end prospects that is worthy of that top 15 type of conversation. It's just he's a rare athlete. He's a rare athlete. He moves at a different speed. And this is in comparison to corners, like not linebackers. Like,
yeah,
he is running away from corners in the SEC, and he was doing that as a true freshman. He is just a rare athlete, and I think he's faster with the ball in his hands, which is scary, right? And so I think he's obviously a really good receiver. He runs great routes, outstanding hands, outstanding ball skills, very just smart and nuanced in the ability to, again, attack leverage. Like, he's doing some advanced stuff through the stem that I think is really, really impressive. But his ability to break tackles. I mean, like, this guy is the complete package when it comes to being a pass catching option. Like, point blank, he is a weapon. As a blocker, I wouldn't even call him bad per se. I would just say you're not going to get a difference making Brock Bowers when he's utilized as a
player.
I think, you know, he's athletic. He has the effort. I think his hands are actually surprisingly pretty good. I think he plays with good pad level. I just don't think he has lower body strength to consistently get movement at the point of attack. But I think he works to sustain blocks really well. You know, he's more of that kind of pivot and wall off guy than a pure drive blocker. But if you're drafting Brock Bowers, you're not going to want to play him as a traditional inline wide tight end. Like, that's wasting Brock Bowers.
Yeah. Well, I guess that brings me to the comp question, because this is something that I've struggled with a little bit. I see Kittle, and that doesn't really, I guess, you know, as a pass catcher, certainly not as a blocker, as a pass catcher, there's some of that there. The thing I do love about him is, he both forces missed tackles and breaks tackles at an unbelievably high level, which it's that combination that's so unique. I think he is both elusive and physical at the same time. And he seems to actually, and this is, I guess, where the Kittle comp comes in. He like relishes it. Like, you can tell he is unafraid of contact, and it's a truly special case. I just don't know when watching him, I don't really think of Kittle the same. Is there a player that comes to mind for you?
I think of Kittle when the ball gets in his hands. I think Brock Bowers might be even a little. You got to remember, I mean, Kittle early on in his career, I mean, this guy was running away from defenses. I mean, he had some pretty unique explosiveness to him.
That's fair.
Sam LaPorta, obviously, we just saw. I mean, he was just a dynamic rookie. I think Brock's probably better athlete, you know, just more explosive. But I think in terms of the route running stuff, the hands, the body control, LaPorta and him have some similarities, but he's such a unique body type. Like,
yeah,
the biggest kind of broad shoulders, but more of like a narrow kind of a waist and legs, where like
crazy long arms.
So he's very unique when you watch him play. So that's why a comp is really kind of hard to come by, but he's just a very unique player, I would say.
Okay. So it's established that we both think he's awesome.
100%.
Let's talk about the value aspect, because this is fascinating to me, and I really think you could see it a lot of different ways. So part of the reason why tight ends don't usually go super high in the draft, well, there's a litany of reasons. One, they take some while to play really well, although recently you've got some examples. LaPorta, you mentioned, have played well very quickly. But a big reason why is you don't get the same value as you do from other positions drafting a tight end high on a rookie contract. Just to put this some numbers behind it, Garrett Wilson was pick 10. I've seen Brock Bowers mocked a lot at pick 10 to the Jets. That's why I'm going there. So Garrett Wilson was the Jets pick at 10. He makes $5.6 million as his cap hit this year. That is unbelievable value for Garrett Wilson, because the tag for a receiver is like $22 million, top of the market. If Garrett Wilson was to hit the market tomorrow, he would get five times that, right?
Absolutely.
Tight end, not so much. Franchise tag value for a tight end is under $13 million. So if you take a tight end there, you're saving $6 million instead of 15, really it would be more on free. The financial savings, especially over the course of the contract, are simply not there. So for me, Brentley, that means a few things. The bar for that tight end is higher because you don't accrue the financial benefit. We're talking, you know, 15 or higher in the draft, 20 or higher, really, the bar is much higher. I also think it comes down to, well, who else is available? Because if like Rome Odunze is there, frankly, like it's just not a smart pick based on one, who I view Odunze is as a player. But when you're suddenly, let's say you're at 15, let's say you're the Colts, and you're comparing Bowers to Thomas Jr., I have a higher degree of confidence that Brock Bowers will be an NFL star right now. So for me, that's where suddenly the value starts to shift a little because of my confidence in the player. How do you view this, like the positional value aspect as it pertains to Bowers in particular, or maybe generally to the tight end position?
Yeah, I think you make a lot of good points. I mean, just given the fact that the tight end rookie deal is so comparable to what you're paying some of these kind of more veteran established tight ends, you aren't going to get that big cost benefit from a rookie player when you compare it to another position. That can't be argued. It's in the numbers. And so it's not really the smartest way to build your roster. With that said, if you truly do value Brock Bowers as a top 10 pick, a player in this class, and if I was a betting man, I think all 32 teams would say Brock Bowers is a top 10 prospect in this class. I think that's probably pretty unanimous. There are some conversations where it's, how close are we to winning? Is a tight end going to be like Brock Bowers? Can they put us over the hump? I think of the Bengals, and I know this is, I think their pick 19. Like, 18. If Brock Bowers was able to fall to them,
oh, my God. A dream.
You make that pick without a second thought. But if you are the Jets and, you know, you probably do need another receiver outside of Garrett Wilson, but yes, you need a tight end. And if it truly came down to, hey, we love Odunze, but we love Bowers equally, you'd have to go with the receiver for the reasons you already pointed out. You'd have to go with the receiver. Now, if it came down to, example, again, your example, the Colts at 15, and it was A.D. Mitchell, who maybe you have a mid to late first on, and then Brock Bowers, you have a top five grade on, you probably would go to Brock Bowers even and acknowledge that this is not great value-wise from the cap and dollars allocated to the player. But we value this guy so much higher in terms of what he can be for our offense. You're willing to kind of make that bet.
It's going to be one of the more fascinating stories of the first round, to be honest, because it's like he could go top 10 or he could fall into the 20. It's so unique. And we'll see if the Kyle Pitts of it all scares teams off as well. Yeah. Although Laporta's success recently probably helps him. I don't really want to go into any details on the other tight ends. I do like Jatavion Sanders. I mentioned him. Maybe just because I watch a lot of Texas. I think if in a different offense, he probably would have gotten even more shine, the Texas offense. Like I said, a lot of mouths to feed. Brentley, I don't know how you come down on him. I think he's just so damn athletic. And, you know, they had him blocking in line. I think there's just a lot of upside there. So he's probably my second favorite tight end in this class. Do you like him, or is there someone else that you would put above him?
He'd be my second tight end in this class as well. I'm not super high on him, if I'm being honest with you. I think this tight end class, I mean, we were due for a bad one given last year, just the crazy tight end. So I'm not really surprised, but, you know, Sanders, I think his tape is actually really good. You know, I'm a big fan of his tape. I think he's a good receiver, runs good routes. I think he has enough juice off the line to kind of stretch the seam. But that 4.7 40 at the combine was pretty concerning to me. I did not see that at all on tape, which, you know, I'm obviously going to go with what I see on tape. But at the end of the day, that 4.7 is kind of in my head a little bit. So I would like him kind of late second, maybe early third. So as you can imagine, there's a pretty substantial gap between Brock Bowers, who I think is a top seven player in the class, versus the next guy at the position.
Yeah, I see it similarly. So, yeah, very unlikely that another tight end will be taken in the first round. Also very unlikely that any running backs will be taken in the first round. I have yet to see a mock with any team taking a back in the first round, beyond the usual reasons why, you know. But I will say, and I mentioned this to you at the beginning, like I do like some of these backs a lot, actually. And as I watch them more, I found myself thinking of like, okay, this team could really use him and he's a good gap runner and whatever. So I sent you a bunch of names. Why don't we start by you telling me how you have them ranked, and then I'll sort of get into how I see things.
Yeah. So the way my backs are ranked is Jonathan Brooks with an asterisk given the injury.
Yeah.
Cool. Then Trey Benson.
Okay. Two for two.
Two for two. Then Jalen Wright.
Okay. Interesting.
Then Bucky Irving from Oregon, number four. And then number five, I had oh gosh, I had Blake Corum, number five.
Okay, cool. We're the same except for I'm sneaking Estime. I just love him. I know. I mean, the combine was horrible, but okay, put a pin. I'm just such a sucker for a violent back.
That's your Carson, your Chris Carson stuff.
And I comped into Chris Carson, which if he was Chris Carson, it'd be amazing. Let's talk about the top two because we both agree, and yeah. I think it seems likely that they will be the first two taken. Although honestly, the backs could go in any order. I wouldn't be terribly surprised because it really depends on the team. Brooks to me, I just would classify him as best all around. He's just kind of good at everything, you know? I mean, he's a zone runner, and I think that's whoever takes him. You definitely want him in that sort of offense, one cut, go, reads the field really well. He's a smart runner. He sees things well. I don't think he's, like, super explosive, but I think he's plenty fast. His speed is a little bit more of, like, a building speed. He's got this, like, long – I mean, 6 feet tall – but he has this like really long stride that I love. He kind of in the open field kind of like gallops away. And then his calling card is the balance, which is just really, really impressive. I didn't come up with a comp I loved. And I landed on 80% Breece Hall, which is, you know, yeah, 80% Breece Hall is like a second rounder maybe. I don't know. So do you have a comp for him? Is there something you love about his game or why do you see your RB1?
Yeah, so my comp was actually Arian Foster, zone running, really smooth. He's just such a smooth runner. And for me, he has good size. I do question the overall kind of how athletic is he. Obviously, he can't test because of the ACL, but yeah. I think he's fast enough. I think he has really good short area quickness. Some of the things he's able to do when the play is not perfectly blocked up, you see his ability to stop on a dime, quickly make a cut left or right, depending on the gap or the hole, and quickly kind of just shoot through it. I think his ability to get you out of trouble for a bigger back, the foot quickness, the balance, the coordination, just the kind of innate feel to maneuver and always just find the hole is what separates himself from Trey Benson, who is more explosive and kind of has that home run hitting ability, which naturally
floor versus ceiling for me. I'm
a sucker for.
Yeah.
But I think Brooks is just a more instinctive and natural runner. And I love the size combination, the ability that he has soft hands. I think.
Oh, I should have mentioned that too. Yeah. He's not a route runner, but he is a really, really nice check down option. There's the screen touchdown versus TCU is the one that I think most people remember, but super soft hands and then his vision as a ball carrier off of little screens and dump offs is really cool.
He may not ever be the guy who is ripping off 40, 50 yard chunk runs like a Benson might, but you would feel really, really good if he is your starting running back next year or moving forward.
So Benson, yeah, I guess I higher ceiling, lower floor is how I would describe him. Yeah. Although, you know, we kind of glazed over it. Brooks did tear his ACL in November, so I don't know when I think he said he'd be ready by camp. I've heard maybe later, but, you know, you're drafting him knowing that. So that is another factor so that will probably affect his draft position. So Benson is just more explosive. Mm-hmm. He is a home run hitter. For me, I think also like he could probably play in either type of scheme. I think he's probably a little bit more of a gap back. I think though, there's just a lot. Some of the tape's kind of frustrating for me. Sometimes he just doesn't see the hole, or he waits too long, or but I think with the right offense, with the right coaching, he could probably be the better player.
This is how I would say it. If you had an offensive line full of Zach Martins and just a great offensive line, I'd probably want Benson. Mm. The two. I think Benson's home run hitting ability, his ability to put his foot in the ground and go, His ability to kind of run through arm tackles when he's bursting through
he's the powerful. Line. Man, he's powerful too.
He's very densely built, runs with a good kind of pad level and lower center of gravity. I like a lot of him, but when it's not blocked up perfectly, he doesn't have the wiggle. He doesn't have the kind of short area quickness and a lateral agility to create something out of nothing. And that's where I think Brooks does have that. Where again, like if I had a perfectly guaranteed offensive line, hey, like we're gonna always block it up and it's gonna be pretty, and it's gonna have a wide hole. Give me Benson all day long. But as we know, that's not always the case. And so you need to have somebody who, hey, if the hole's not there, make something happen. And I don't know if Benson has that just flexibility and the looseness to create, right? And I think Brooks does.
So Corum and Irving, I think will probably be seen in that same tier or compared to each other, large part because of size. I actually don't know which one is tall. I think Irving might be a little bit taller than
Irving's taller. I think Corum has him by like 10 pounds.
For me, it's really just kind of what do you need? I know I said I joked about that being a cop out, but it's really true for running back position. And it's especially true because Corum is much more run between the tackles, power back. And Irving is very interesting. I think he's going to be pretty divisive, frankly. But he gives you the pass catching upside. I mean, would you say he's the best pass catching back of, you know, the first three round guys in the class?
You
know, like the New Hampshire kid, who I have not watched, Dylan Lobby. I haven't watched.
He has a lot of fans. I do think Marshawn Lloyd, who was another guy from USC, if we were to lump him in the mix, I do think that's probably the top six, right? I think he is pretty good in terms of his receiving ability. Like you actually see him running routes. Oregon didn't utilize Bucky as like, hey, let's line up in the slot and let him run routes. But I do think, you know, he is a very natural pass catcher. I think he does that kind of short area quickness to separate if he was asked to be, you know, a route runner. Certainly more so than a guy like Corum, who we really didn't really kind of see him in that regard. I think Bucky, the combine probably scared a lot of teams away, I would say. I think, you know, I never thought he'd be a 4.4 guy. You don't really see that on tape. There is times where he gets caught from the back, but the 29-inch vertical, that was something to me I was really surprised. Because you see the explosiveness in the cuts, the ability to make defenders miss. I mean, like he can stop on a dime, reverse field, and the defensive player is still like stuck in the ground. Like his ability to change direction, I thought was the best in this class. And so for him to not at least show some level of explosiveness in the testing, I was shocked. And so I think there's some questions there. And then, you know, the size for Bucky, you know, because he is 180 pounds. I think he weighed in at the combine 190. I'm not looking.
Yeah. The precedent is pretty small for players that size in the NFL. I think I might be a little bit higher on him than consensus. Yeah. And as you were talking about it, I had all these flashbacks of Washington playing Oregon and me just screaming, tackle that little effort. Yeah. And I was thinking like, it's almost like a game recognized game in the way that you might be a little higher on Odunze because he killed you so much. I might be higher at Irving watching him as a UW fan and be like, God, somebody tackle that. Oopa loopa.
I know. That's exactly right. And like he's so elusive. And I don't mean you had a funny exchange in the season when I comped him to Alvin Kamara. I was obviously very caught up in the I was caught up in what I was watching, but like the contact balance for a guy his size is pretty remarkable. I mean, he breaks so many tackles in which like you think a player his size simply wouldn't, like you think he could knock backwards, but he consistently stays on his feet. Yeah. And it's going to be, I would not be shocked if he does get drafted a lot later than maybe me and you think, just given
the size in the
testing.
Combine.
Yeah, the testing.
I think SMA will fall because of the combine because he had a horrible combine too. I
love SMA in the fifth round. My goodness.
I mean, that's the thing about these guys is like if you can get like SMA, I've seen compared to Gus Edwards, similar running style. If you can get him later like that, he's amazing value. And I think he, you know, a lot of these players, it really just depends on. If you can get any of them, you know, in fourth, fifth, and whatever, I love it. You know, I think with Brooks and Benson being at the top. So, you know, I would not be surprised if as much as maligned as this class is, three or four of these guys end up being like good starting running backs in the NFL. Would not be surprised at all.
It reminds me of a Breece Hall, Kenneth Walker class where like none of them went first round, but I think like three or four went second round and they're all pretty good starters. Like, you know, I think that could be maybe not second round for this class, maybe like bottom second, early three. But then we're going to look back this time next year and be like, yeah, I mean, we have three starters and four other good players in a committee.
Hey, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Question for me is how high the Cowboys take it back. We'll see. Brentley, this was so much fun. I really enjoyed your rankings, consensus, and otherwise. Some good hot takes and a lot of agreement. I will be curious to see where all these guys land. You can hear about them every week. We've been doing these mock drafts, and I'm sure you guys are familiar with some of these names, particularly the wide receivers, and obviously from that. But yeah, just to remind folks, you guys can follow Brentley on Twitter, X at Brentley12. And I'll have to have you back on sometime.
Anytime, you know, maybe we can do a little preview of UW Oregon next year.
Oh, hopefully, my goodness. I don't want to.
Hopefully it's not 1-4, because if it is, just forget about me.
I'm already dreading next year based on the amount of UW players you've heard us talking about. Guys, thank you as always for tuning in. This is on ESPN2 on Thursday, so you can check that out. It's also on YouTube at youtube.com/@MinaKimes. Do not forget to subscribe, rate, and review, and listen to the show on Amazon Music or wherever you get your pods.